August the 8th, Friday, 77 degrees, going up to 89 today. And the heat, while terrible, has not been brutal. Let's put it that way. A 40% chance for showers through the weekend. And I don't see anything up and through next Saturday that would be over 90 degrees for a high, which is good. The humidity is still going to be ridiculous, and the tropics are quiet for the next 7 days, so we'll take it. That's all we can do at this time in hurricane season. Prashant Yadav joins us now, healthcare supply chain expert at the Council on Foreign Relations, to talk about pharmaceutical tariffs. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm well, Tommy. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks for taking the time. Let's talk about what President Trump has proposed with an idea toward what?
So we have to acknowledge that the United States has a high degree of dependency on multiple pharmaceutical products that come largely imported from India, China, other countries in the world. And some of these are critical medicines. Our healthcare system, our hospitals, clinics, and patients depend critically on these medicines. And in case there is any shortage, which could be due to geopolitical events or trade embargoes or anything of that nature, can hamper the healthcare system's resilience, its ability to maintain continuity of care. So the idea is to make sure that we use the right policy instruments to bring back more manufacturing of critical medicines to the U.S., or at least to diversify it to come from multiple countries instead of being over-dependent on, let's say, China or India.
Are we, in your opinion, over-dependent right now on China and India?
For certain categories of medicines, yes, we are. One example is heparin, which is a blood thinner that I would say about a few million Americans take routinely for either chronic conditions or when they're going through a cardiovascular or the procedure as an IV. And there our dependence is very high on China as the supplier of the active ingredient, even though there are multiple manufacturers, including some in the United States, that make the finished product. But the active ingredient that goes into the finished product comes about 90 or 95% from China to these manufacturers. So that's one example. Amoxicillin, which is a staple for pediatric practices around the country, or many other antibiotics, the same issue repeats. We have either a very few select manufacturers in India or China, or even if we have a finished product manufacturer in the U.S., it gets all of its input in materials and ingredients from China. So the examples are very many, but we have a high degree of dependence on select critical medicines. That doesn't mean we have it on all the medicines. The higher-end medicines, so for example, cell and gene therapy, new modalities of treatment such as mRNA treatments, those are things, and higher-end biologics, cancer care, those are things that are made domestically in the U.S. They have been developed here. But more traditional and established medicines, generics, but also on-patent products that have been around for more than 10 years, those are the ones where we have a higher degree of dependency on imports.
Does it skew more toward those that are generic than are under patent?
Yes. So more of the generic medicines are imported from India and China, the reason being that the margins on these are very thin. And as a result, the cost of production becomes an important consideration in deciding where to source product from. So generic medicines are the ones where the dependency is much, much higher. But that doesn't mean it's only generic medicines. There are other products which are made, if not in India and China, let's say they're made in Europe, in Ireland, in Switzerland, and the U.S. imports them from those countries. And sometimes the reasons are for tax optimization. Sometimes the reasons are because the companies had set up a large plant in Europe, and instead of fragmenting their manufacturing network and having more than one factory, they want to keep supplying from a single factory because it helps them reduce costs in some ways.
So,
but to answer your question bluntly, yes, it is largely generic medicines.
So when it comes to these weight loss medications that so many people rely on, I'm a little bit confused because I know they have brand names, but I know there are people that provide these medications that are not the brand names. They are getting those from China. How does that work with other countries and patents medications, weight loss drugs, et cetera?
So for weight loss drugs, we have two that are authorized at the moment. One is a drug made by Eli Lilly and Company, and the other is made by Novo Nordisk. Mm-hmm. The drug from Novo Nordisk is manufactured to a larger extent in Europe. The drug from Eli Lilly is manufactured to a greater degree, or if not fully, in the U.S. But because the total supply has not been that high historically, many compounding pharmacies in the U.S. have started buying the active ingredient for these products and compounding them, essentially filling them into small vials that patients use. So it's become a market which consists of two manufacturers with production sites that are located, in one case, Novo Nordisk more in Europe, Eli Lilly more in the U.S., and then a number of compounding groups and pharmacies that have evolved. Now, as the total capacity from the original manufacturers, Lilly and Novo Nordisk, starts to expand, the role of the compounding pharmacies starts getting diluted because we may not need them. The manufacturers themselves can fulfill the demand. So that's the juncture at which the anti-obesity and the weight loss drug market is at currently.
I know you wrote a paper on tariffs, so we're going to talk about that in a second, but quickly to revisit these weight loss drugs for a second. So if it's a patent medication, how can a compounding pharmacy know what the recipe is?
So if it's a patented medicine, the company owns the patent to produce it, but in case there is a shortage of supply, which means the company cannot fulfill its entire demand in the country, we allow compounding pharmacies to manufacture. And when I say manufacture, I'm essentially talking about taking an active ingredient and filling it into a vial or into a capsule in some cases. That is legal, and that's what is happening for the obesity drugs. Now, there are lots of nuances in how the intellectual property plays out in such a scenario. Mm-hmm. How much royalties paid to the company? Do the companies authorize such a mechanism? I think that's a much more complex space, which requires a lot of nuance of intellectual property legislation.
I just wonder generally, so it's a patent medication, but the formula is available for compounding pharmacies if needed. Would that be accurate?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me take a break. We'll come back, talk about your paper on tariffs. Prashant Yadav is our guest, healthcare supply chain expert at the Council on Foreign Relations. We'll talk about President Trump's proposed proposed tariffs on imported drugs. 621 traffic now, WWL. Tommy Tucker, WWL, 626 and a half, talking to Prashant Yadav, healthcare supply chain expert at the Council on Foreign Relations. I know you wrote a 12-page letter on blanket tariffs on pharmaceutical imports. I could rumble and fumble and stumble my way through it, Prashant, but I think it's best just to let you give us maybe the overview and walk us through it.
So we want to start by saying that there is generally a problem in America's pharmaceutical supply chain, which is a high, extremely high in some cases, degree of dependence on China and in some cases, companies in India. That problem is a national security risk, it is a health system resilience risk, and needs to be addressed. We highlight examples, you know, in the periods when we, after 9/11, we had the anthrax attacks, we had to rely on ciprofloxacin, something which we considered to be a medicine of critical national security importance at that time. We remind people that today, a large portion of the supply of ciprofloxacin, that sort of key antibiotic we needed for anthrax, is now coming from India and China, and the active pharmaceutical ingredient of that is coming from China. So we do need some kind of policy action. But then we go into looking at, does a policy instrument that consists of blanket tariffs on all pharmaceuticals solve the problem? Or does it, in fact, create additional unintended consequences, such as will it create shortages of key generic medicines, where we've already had shortages many times in the past? These include injectable chemotherapy agents, other injectable generics that are sort of main staple use in a hospital setting. So I think our—
Are you talking about saline solution and things like that, Prashant?
Not just saline solution. Saline solution could be one of those, but also things such as you know, injectable chemotherapy would be the best example of this. We've had multiple shortages. It comes from a few companies in India and China. So I think our key ask is we ought to solve this problem of high degree of dependence. It's important for national security. It's important for health system readiness. It's important for ensuring the quality of medicines that every American gets. But we've got to look at this with a range of policy instruments, not just tariffs. We need to think about what will incentivize a large global company to set up a generic manufacturing plant or other medicines manufacturing plant in the U.S. over the locations that they choose by themselves. When left to its own devices, the supply chain chooses locations that are best from a tax standpoint, that are best from an environmental compliance standpoint, that are best from capital investment standpoint. We've got to change that equation so that companies feel, oh, if I set up my new factory in Louisiana or in North Carolina, I'm going to be at least at par with what it would mean to set it up in another location in India or China or Europe or Ireland. So that's going to require a number of different policy instruments, government giving concessional loans, government gearing up the federal purchasing, whether it is for the VA system or for other government purchasing, DOD, making sure that it buys from a new company that sets up a plant in the United States. And that demand side needs to be addressed. Just tariffs alone, essentially, it's creating unpredictability for the companies to say, should I move my location to the U.S.? If I move it, what will be the implications? And doesn't necessarily create a strong and compelling business case for a company to move location, in particular for generic companies. Now, we have to admit that many companies in the last few months have announced large investments, both in manufacturing and in clinical development in the U.S. After the inauguration of President Trump. And these amount to hundreds of billions of dollars of new investment. But once again, we've got to keep in mind that this new investment that has been announced is largely coming into areas which are the high-end therapeutics, cell and gene therapy, advanced biologics, which are important. But these are areas where we don't have as high a degree of import dependence on India and China.
Thank you, Prashant. I appreciate your time and your insight. Prashant Yadav, Healthcare Supply Chain Expert, Council on Foreign Relations. It's a Rubik's Cube. We'll talk more when we come back. 6:31, 29 till 7. Time now, WWL First News.